All this week, NPR is looking at the serious problems facing many public pension funds. A recent report by the Pew Center on the States says 21 states have pension plans that are not properly funded. 8 states are in especially bad shape. In Pennsylvania, the state's 2 large public pension plans are viewed as relatively healthy. But even there, generous benefits and worse-than-expected investment returns have combined to raise doubts about the future. NPR's Tamara Keith reports.
These fourth graders at Hershey Intermediate Elementary School don't know it, but paying for their teachers' retirement benefits is going to cost them. Dr. Linda Brewer is the superintendent of the Derry Township School District in Hershey.
They're going to be paying for this down the road when they're grown and they have jobs.
Brewer may be projecting into the future, but what she's talking about is on a lot of people's minds. Pennsylvania, like many other states, hasn't done a very good job of setting aside money to make good on the pension promises it's made. Soon, school districts around the state will have to dramatically increase their pension contributions. For the Derry Township schools, the bill will jump from about $600,000 this year to $3.7 million in 2013.
It's very significant.
Brewer is looking at some stark choices: cut programs and increase class sizes, or raise property taxes.
Our retired citizens are saying, do not raise our taxes, and our parents are saying, we don't want you to raise our taxes, but if that's what it takes to maintain these solid programs, that's what we want you to do.
Pennsylvania's governor and others want to soften the impact of the looming crisis with an accounting maneuver. They want to spread the pain of making the pension funds whole over a longer time frame. But critics say they're just kicking the can down the road. This plan would avoid a property tax increase today, but will no doubt hit those fourth graders and their families eventually. But as Brewer sees it, these pensions are how school districts like hers attract highly qualified teachers. Jerry Alexiak became a public school teacher 25 years ago, partly for the pension benefits.
I knew I was not going to make the money that I could make elsewhere. I was willing to do that because, first of all, I love teaching. And secondly, I knew that there was something worthwhile at the end of that.
Combine the pension obligations for state employees and teachers, and Pennsylvania currently has more than $20 billion in unfunded liabilities. That amount is expected to balloon in the next few years to more than $55 billion. But the amazing thing is, just 10 years ago, these pension funds were running surpluses.
Some of the worst things are done in the best of times.
Stephen Nickel works for the State Teachers Union now, but in 2001, he was a member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. The pension funds were flush with cash, and those surpluses were burning a hole in the state's pocket.
There was like euphoria, and legislators in Pennsylvania and other states basically dipped into their surpluses and increased benefits for employees.
Nickel, a fiscally conservative Republican, was one of the very few lawmakers to vote against the expanded benefits. Before the ink was dry, it became clear the surpluses weren't going to last. But instead of putting more state money into the pension system, the legislature opted to defer the suffering for 10 years. Robert Gensel is policy director for the State Workers Pension Fund. He says what the legislature did didn't make the state's unfunded pension liabilities go away. It only made them worse.
The Commonwealth has basically been saying to us, keep paying that money, pay this increased benefit. And we say to them, well, it's going to cost you a lot of money. And they say, well, just put it on our tab.
And he says the tab keeps getting bigger and bigger. The market crash in 2008 dashed hopes that stellar investment returns could solve the state's pension problems. Both of the state's big pension funds lost more than 25% in a single year. Rick Dreyfus with the Free Market Commonwealth Foundation in Harrisburg says Pennsylvania's pension predicament, like that in so many other states, is the result of politics.
Pension plans are run for a political rate of return, and that is to say that it's easy for a politician or a policymaker to give benefits right now, even retroactively, and then defer that cost up to 30 years.
There's really no political upside to raising taxes or cutting programs to make pension funds whole. Like all public pension funds, in Pennsylvania, obligations to retirees are ironclad, and eventually state residents will have to pay. Tamara Keith, NPR News.
In California, retirement benefits owed to hundreds of thousands of workers are placing another big burden on the state's economy. Our coverage of the pension crisis continues later today on All Things Considered. We're hearing this week about the state of public pensions across America. Today we visit Kansas and Nebraska. The two are quite a bit alike, big farm states, proud of their pioneer heritage. But when it comes to the way they approach their pension funds, they couldn't be more different. Nebraska has its funds in top condition, while Kansas is in terrible shape. KCUR's Frank Morris reports.
Lots of people don't have a retirement plan. But among those who do, there are two basic types, the 401k and the traditional pension plan. Now, the traditional pension has just about disappeared from the private sector, but it's still quite common for government workers, police, firemen, teachers, and it can be a pretty good deal.
We are living right now on the same amount of money that we were living on when I was teaching all the time. And when I get Social Security, I'll actually get a raise.
Clifford Manning retired 5 years ago as a high school band teacher here in Topeka, Kansas, at 59 with full benefits from the state retirement system. But at the rate Kansas taxpayers and state workers are contributing to the pension fund, the state can't sustain this kind of pension indefinitely.
The chickens have come home to roost.
Anthony Hensley, a Democrat, is the minority leader of the Kansas Senate.
I mean, it's been years and years of neglect. Now we have an unfunded liability that makes our system, according to this new Pew report, the second worst in the country.
At the beginning of last year, the fund was over $8 billion in the hole, less than 60% funded and losing grand.
I don't know. I'm a native Kansan. It is a little surprising.
Glenn Deck runs the pension fund from his office here in downtown Topeka. He says the benefits Kansas gives are relatively low, so that's not the problem. Deck says a bit of bad advice set up the mess in Kansas. When the state raised benefits in the early 1990s, an actuary told lawmakers that investment income would cover the difference.
It was reliant too much on, you know, great investment returns during that time and the belief that things would continue to go up, and the world changed.
The stock market tumbled and didn't fully recover. Gradually, the state began to raise contributions. Then it cut benefits sharply. New hires have to work longer and contribute more before drawing pensions. Not enough. The fund is still deteriorating. But since pensioners keep getting their checks, Kansas Senate President Stephen Morris says it's hard to get his colleagues to pay attention.
Well, sometimes you see eyes rolling and people looking away and, you know, why do we have to do this? But we do.
Sickly pension systems do not right themselves. They snowball. But it doesn't have to be this way.
All those in favor vote yay, opposed nay.
About 3.5 hours north of Topeka, in Lincoln, Nebraska, Senator Dave Pankinen chairs a committee overseeing a pension system in near-perfect health.
Nebraska has had this tradition of consistently looking at the plans, trying to take action as needed, instead of waiting and kicking the can down the road until it's a full-blown crisis.
It's more than a tradition. It's state law. Unlike their colleagues in Kansas, Nebraska lawmakers are required to keep the pension funds flush. That makes Phyllis Chambers' job easier. She runs the pension system. Her actuaries calculate the amount the state can expect to pay out in pensions. They balance that number against contributions made by workers in the state plus investment income. If there's a shortfall, Chambers simply hands lawmakers the bill.
This is your liability for the year. It's not an if, but it's more like this is what it is.
Another difference is that Nebraska's pension fund is much smaller. There are fewer workers to cover. Most of them are on a 401k type system with the state more than matching worker contributions. It's almost impossible for the state to end up with big pension liabilities. Judges, highway patrol officers, and teachers have traditional pension plans, and as you might expect, they sound pretty happy.
All indications are to me that we're protected and everything's going to work out really well for us.
Robin Stevens here is attending a retirement seminar in Omaha. He's a school superintendent. He's heard about the trouble with the Kansas pension fund and thinks it might be making it easier for him to recruit new teachers.
When we have openings in Nebraska, it seems like we're getting more Kansas applicants.
Stories like this and various studies have turned up pressure on Kansas to fix its pension fund. it's not going to be easy. Senator Morris wants big increases in workers' mandatory contributions to the fund and the amount the state is putting in. But the state already faces an enormous budget shortfall, so it's hard to imagine where the money would come from. There's also talk of phasing out the traditional pension fund altogether and moving to a 401k-type system, more like Nebraska. For NPR News, I'm Frank Morris.
This week, NPR is going to zero in on a big financial problem that's getting larger and could threaten the solvency of some states. Over the past several decades, many states made pension promises that will be very expensive to keep. So from Connecticut to California, pension funds for teachers, firefighters, and other public employees are severely underfunded. Some experts put the overall shortfall at more than $2 trillion, and taxpayers are on the hook. Robert Gensel is policy director for Pennsylvania Employees Retirement System.
This is very important for people to understand. These pension fund obligations are backed by the full faith and credit of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, which means ultimately they're backed by the taxpayers.
All this week on Morning Edition and All Things Considered, you will hear about the pension promises various states have made. NPR reporter Tamara Keith has been looking into the issue and is in the studio with a preview. And first, Tamara, why are these pension plans so underfunded?
Well, there are a bunch of reasons. The recession and the stock market crash took a big chunk out of these funds. In 2008 alone, state pension funds lost about 25% of their value. And then there are a number of other factors I'd put in the category of politics.
Politics?
Yes, because these are public pensions. Decisions about how they're operated and funded are made by politicians. So in the late 90s, when the markets were booming, lawmakers all over the country sweetened retirement benefits. But then the investment returns tanked, and state and local governments were going to have to put more money into their retirement systems to keep them fully funded. And that's not so easy. When budgets are tight, shorting pension funds is a politically easy way to avoid raising taxes or having to make painful cuts. One pension expert I spoke with, Rick Dreyfuss at the Free Market Commonwealth Foundation, put it this way.
They don't want to increase taxes, but by not paying for this, the liability doesn't go away. It just gets larger.
So what exactly does this mean for retirees and the rest of us?
Well, retired public employees don't really have anything to worry about. These pension payments are incredibly well protected under the law. So if a pension fund runs short on cash, it's the city and the state that are on the hook. And that means that in the future, a whole lot of us who ourselves don't have pensions will be working longer or paying higher taxes or maybe even suffering reduced services to keep those pension checks coming. And it's not unusual for public employees to be able to retire at 55 and keep getting something like 80% of their peak salary for the rest of their lives. And so you could say, oh, it's not fair for the rest of us to pay for this. You could also say, hey, these people devoted their lives to serving the public good. Don't they deserve it?
Tell us more about what's going to be on the series.
We visit Kansas and Nebraska. They're two states on opposite ends of the spectrum. Reporter David Shaper tells us about Illinois, which has the unwelcome distinction of being the worst funded pension in the country. Jim Zeroli looks at risk. Some of these funds are taking incredible risks to try to get higher returns. Richard Gonzalez in California takes a look at something known as pension spiking, where employees boost the heck out of their income the last years on the job so that when they retire, they actually end up getting more than their annual salary normally was. And I went to Pennsylvania to take a closer look at some of those political dynamics that push pension bills onto future generations.
NPR's Tamara Keith, and you can hear all those stories and more all week on Morning Edition and All Things Considered. Tamara, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You're listening to Weekend Edition from NPR News.
As the recession ricocheted throughout the country's financial markets, it didn't just affect personal retirement accounts like 401ks. The market volatility also hit big public pension funds, funds that were supposedly safe. Now, most state and local governments have huge nest eggs they've set aside to pay retirement benefits for their employees, and they invest that money in everything from government bonds to real estate. In a moment, we'll speak with Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa about that city's soaring pension costs and its impact on a massive budget deficit. First, though, to NPR's Jim Zaroli, who takes a look at the high-stakes world of pensions and whether some funds might be taking on too much risk in search of higher returns. It's part of our series on pensions, airing throughout the week.
Stuyvesant Town is an 89-building apartment complex that sprawls across Manhattan's east side. At the height of the housing boom, the commercial real estate firm Tishman Speyer paid a record $5.4 billion for it and a sister complex across the street. Sonny Fink of the Tenants Association sits on a park bench in Stuyvesant Town and explains how the deal fell apart.
Well, it's still owned by Tishman Speyer, who bought it in 2006, but they defaulted on the loans and have more or less walked away from the place.
So Tishman Speyer was the lead investor, and were there other investors as well?
There were Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and the Church of England, poor thing, and the government of Singapore, and a number of retirement funds.
Among the investors hurt in Stuyvesant Town were the Florida State Retirement Fund and the California Public Employees Retirement System, or CalPERS, which lost some $500 million. Joe Deere, CalPERS' chief investment officer, says CalPERS took a serious risk by investing in the deal.
Hindsight tells us clearly that that was gravely an error. And frankly, the people that were responsible for that decision aren't at CalPERS anymore.
All told, CalPERS' real estate portfolio lost half its value during the market crash. With $200 billion in assets, CalPERS can absorb the loss. Still, the transaction illustrates how pension fund investing has changed. Once, pension funds tended to invest in safe assets like treasury bills. In the 80s, many shifted their money into stocks, which promised higher returns over time. But when the dot-com bubble burst, many funds took a big hit, says Keith Brainerd of the National Association of State Retirement Administrators.
And so a lot of these funds came out of the 2002 market decline, believing that they needed to further diversify their holdings.
Today, some funds have less than a fifth of their money in safe investments like treasury bills. The rest goes into international stocks, private equity, even hedge funds. In some ways, diversification is a smart strategy. Invest in a wide range of assets and you're less vulnerable if one of them loses value. CalPERS' Joe Deere says diversification makes sense for another reason.
One of the principal advantages of a pension fund, particularly a public pension fund, is a very long investment horizon. It's completely different from what individuals face on their own individual retirement planning.
In other words, pension funds go on indefinitely, collecting money and paying out benefits only gradually. And that means they have some leeway to take chances. They can put money in assets like real estate and private equity. These assets are risky because they can't be sold off quickly, but they can be very profitable over time. But as Stuyvesant Town shows, pension funds can still get burned. And Deere says funds have to assess how much risk they want to take on very carefully. The danger is that some funds will go too far. Joshua Rao, associate professor of finance at Northwestern's Kellogg School, says many states and cities face budget deficits right now. And with less money available, many funds are under pressure to take on more risk than is good for them.
Many funds are investing in strategies that people might classify as risky. They're investing money in private equity and other investment vehicles that may have a higher expected return on average, but also more risk. And, you know, as I said, I mean, one of the reasons why they're trying to do this is that they're trying to gamble their way out of the problem.
In general, pension funds have plenty of money to keep sending checks to retirees for the foreseeable future. But it's also true that many have become comfortable with a level of risk that once was unthinkable. And they're vulnerable to market forces in a way they didn't used to be. Jim Zaroli, NPR News.
You can follow our series on the pension crisis this week on All Things Considered Morning Edition and online at npr.org.